Hello and welcome to Clinical Hours After Dark. We're on episode 5 and today's topic is how cost of living is affecting mental health. On today's episode, we have Dr. Ogechi, and who is our host. And Dr. Oge, how have you been?
I've been good. Long time no hear, friendship. You good?
I'm good. Today's topic is a very sensitive one and one that we have to take with care and caution to all our listeners. But as usual, I start with the first question, which is, what are the most common mental health symptoms that you've seen across your practice?
As you know, the cost of living crisis is not just happening in the UK, but it's also happening across the world. Since coming out of the pandemic, we've seen a lot of people, even during the pandemic, have episodes of depression, and this all comes down to finances. And it's something that we've seen more now. I mean, it's not great across the world. It's not great in the UK at the moment. And it's impacting local people. It's impacting many communities, some more than others, including the Black and ethnic minority communities. So socioeconomic status amongst certain groups of people within the population of the UK are more affected. Mm-hmm. And that's really what's been happening. You know, you're seeing more people come into A&E with depression or suicide attempts because they cannot cope. You know, they can't afford to eat. Mm-hmm. They can't afford to lay their head somewhere at night. Mm-hmm. Rent is really expensive. Not to talk about, you know, people trying to buy a house. Some people have given up trying to buy a house. Mm-hmm. Unless you come from the Bank of England or the Bank of Mum and Dad.
Yeah. That's a very typical one, right?
If you happen to inherit something from your grandparents or something, some form of inheritance, the job market is very bleak for many young people, especially under 30. You know, people are delaying buying a house. People are even delaying children. You know, people that are, who have families that are single parents are struggling to make ends meet. You know, I think I heard on the radio the other day that a mother was trying to choose between food and heating in the house. Energy bills are through the roof. And if you compare ourselves to the rest of Europe,
yeah,
you know, we are paying extortionate fees at the rate.
And it seems that it doesn't seem to be going down. But one question I want to ask essentially is that, are there specific demographic groups that are more vulnerable to mental health issues as a result of cost of living?
Yes, so people who have pre-existing mental health conditions will suffer more or will even exacerbate some of their symptoms. Mm. Some might end up, you know, in hospital because they cannot cope and they are a harm to themselves and to the loved ones that they're with. Some stop taking their medication. But in particular, people from deprived areas or who live in deprived areas so tend to have a higher or poorer, let's say, poorer mental health than those who live in affluent, well-to-do areas. And that's because of the existing, what we call social determinants of health. So things pertaining to the household income, housing, accommodation, food, you know, all these things are influencing factors, nutrition, as to how somebody's mental health is affected. In these deprived areas, you see people that will eat chicken and chips all day. So if you look at the UK, so especially in England, you know, the northern part of the country tends to be economically less off than the southern part of the UK, which is London and the southeast. And that's down to salary, really. You know, people come into London to work because you get paid more than for the same job that you do up north. So initially, you know, before, you know, the cost of living crisis and Brexit, you know, people were just happy. People were a lot happier. And this is where politics as well, which we don't want to delve in too much, but there have been certain policies by different governments across the decades that have exacerbated some of these cost of living problems as well. So people that live in Newcastle, parts of Newcastle, parts of Sheffield, parts of Manchester, parts of Scotland have areas of severe deprivation.
Yeah.
Compared to some parts in London, for instance. Let's say Chelsea, for argument's sake.
Before I even go into my next question, do we have data on the difference between the deprivation in London as compared to somewhere in Sheffield or somewhere in Manchester, for example, or Birmingham? Do we have data? It appears that the focus is always about London, right?
So to answer your question, yes, there is a lot of data out there. And if you go on the Gov website, there is data around demographics. There's data around areas of deprivation. And also, if you go to your local authority, there's something that they call in public health, like a local authority profile, and that will profile the area you're in. So let's say for Newham is very diverse. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of the diverse local authorities across the country. Mm-hmm. But if you compare that to somewhere remotely, somewhere in the north of the country or in Wales, which mm-hmm. has yeah. you know, many towns and villages,
yeah.
the demographic will be, you know, considerably, significantly different, yeah. you know. So there is existing data, which is accessible online okay. on your Gov website. You just need to type your local authority profile. So it could be for Camden, Blackpool, Manchester, Westminster, mm. Newham, Hackney, whichever it is. It would give you a profile of areas of deprivation. Mm. Mm. Also socio-demographic data, so which ethnic group lives in certain areas, and if there's a correlation to due to like their employment status, immigration status, and that's even accessible online, you know, on the Gov website, that anyone can access. It's public, so there's no restrictions. And it's easily accessible, definitely.
All right. That's a very good... I like your response for that. So what role do social support system play in mitigating the mental health impact that we have seen as a result of cost of living crisis that we are going through?
So this is something that was seen in the pandemic as well. If you remember from the lockdowns, the various lockdowns, a lot of people became closer with their family and supporting each other, especially in certain communities.
Are you trying to imply that the lockdown brought about family reunion, right? Is that what you're trying to say?
you could put it that way. Some people got closer, yes.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you had some people that, you know, they were sick of their family or their partner and they just broke
yeah,
up with them.
That's a, yeah.
But in certain communities, especially in minority communities, familiness and unity, a community is important. So, for instance, we saw, you know, people from Black and South Asian minority backgrounds, they tend to stick more together. And that's because of the communal aspect of the culture, right? Mm-hmm. So even those who were isolated, and remember, everyone forgot about the elderly population.
Yeah.
So elderly people from Asian backgrounds, South Asian backgrounds or African Caribbean backgrounds, their grandchildren or their children would drop off food at their doorstep or to check in on them every week, because that's something of that social support would keep them going or essentially alive, because they're not lonely.
Yeah.
Because we saw a lot of the elderly population come more lonely during the pandemic and even till now.
Mm.
So it's something, social support is a big driving factor for people to stay sane
yeah.
this cost of living.
Yeah.
If you are by yourself and you're just, you know, it's cost of living and it's biting you and you have no one to turn to, more times you're going to go to your GP and say that you can't cope. GP might make a referral, or if you have money you can go and get treatment privately. Or what tends to happen is, especially amongst ethnic minorities, they go to A&E more.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's something that they know that, okay, if I go into the hospital, I'll seek help quicker than just going to their GP who can actually give them options. Yeah. So that's just a trend that you tend to see. And also the fact that social support, that everyone needs each other at this point. So if you know anyone, don't be afraid to check in on them and also support them during this difficult time. So we're all here to help each other.
Well, can you discuss any effective coping mechanisms or strategies that you believe that an individual can employ to manage mental health challenges during this economic hardship? Because I could say that there is economic hardship. You know, the drinks I used to buy for 120 is no longer 120, it's 155. That's a 6% or 7% increase. And that's happening across all, everything, isn't it, essentially? And what strategy do you think can be used? Because you've already mentioned the family unit, the way all our communities are coming together. But it's possible some people are lonely. They don't have families. So what do you think are the coping strategies, you know, for somebody in such a situation?
I think for some people, there's practical coping strategies. So one is the availability of food. So I'm sure you've seen on the news, but there's been an increase of food banks across the country, even for people in decent paid jobs, because they can't afford to buy food. And like you said, you know, buying a bottle of water or even eggs used to be so cheap.
Don't drop the egg.
You know, everyone is now cautious about buying eggs because they want it to last longer.
I'm sure you know that guy Eddie Abu, yeah, on Instagram, yes. Right? I'm sure, you know, don't drop that egg. You know the funny part? I think since I've been conscious about egg, right? I've been conscious about my health, right? He's like, and that guy's just popping up.
Yeah,
the guy is a serious critic.
Very good job.
Really,
because now people are more health conscious. And you know, I think I went into Tesco's the other day and I saw like protein, pro milk written on everything. And I just thought of Eddie and me, what would he say?
And I said to myself, right, oh my goodness, that this guy, he doesn't even know, but he's affecting the minds of people.
Yeah. You're seeing more people in the gym, and that's one of the coping strategies for people going through difficult
times.
But now people are using gym as an outlet to manage their mental health. You know, some people can't afford a therapist, so the gym is their therapy. And also more people are traveling out of the country or doing staycations because that elevates your mood. A change of scenery is good.
And I think you've rightly said that if you can't afford a therapist, gym is a very good option, because even a therapist now, I'm sure, everything has gone up. They've had to tweak their prices.
Yes, inflation, they'll tell you.
It's hit everybody.
It's hit everyone.
Yeah. Everybody. So, you know?
Yesterday's price is not today's
price.
You don't have to go to, like, David Lloyd's. I mean, it's nice to go to David Lloyd's, but or Third Space. But if, you know, there's the gym group that is, you know, about... They even do discounts for students as well. So they've made gym accessible. I think before you used to just see like pop-up chicken and chip shops everywhere, but now you see pop-up gyms everywhere, which is really good because people's attitudes are changing towards health, towards fitness, and towards staying sane. So another coping strategy would be people practicing mindfulness. So people are practicing mindfulness, people are practicing meditation. Some people depend on their faith, so they draw nearer to God, they're praying more, and they feel a sense of peace and relief to get through the day. Others rely on their family, so their mom, their siblings, their dad, grandparents. Some people have comfort animals for those who are really anxious. Mm-hmm. So they might have dogs, cats, rabbits, hamsters.
That's true.
I'm not going to name the whole farm.
Yeah, well, I get the point.
There's something my mom would always say is contentment and gratitude. Because you actually think about it.
Sure.
And you're walking in that answered prayer.
It's all about everybody needs a strategy. We are individuals in this society. I mean, we came to this world alone, right? So
unfortunately.
The coping strategy must be also personal and must be intentional. To my last question, I think we've gone past the 15 minutes recording that we're meant to do for every episode. But the last question is, you are a mental health professional. So the question here is, how are mental health professionals adapting their approaches to better support clients affected by financial stress and uncertainty? Because that in itself can be so disheartening. And I'm just saying, how are you help mental health professionals dealing with it? And when your client comes to you and say there's a housing issue, what do you do? I mean, there's a lot.
I guess with housing, they're normally working with the housing association and their social worker. Mm-hmm. So that's where the multidisciplinary team comes in handy. So you don't have to bear the brunt of everything that is requested. With that being said, you know, social worker will work with the council and different accommodation providers to see what's feasible for these clients as well, because it needs to meet their needs. Mm-hmm. Another thing more mental health professionals are doing is personalized centered care and treatment. So it's based, it's including service users in their decision making, and it's not something that is imposed on them. So it's just something that was learned from Oliver McGowan, who unfortunately passed away, and it's now a training that is accessible to all staff to complete, all NHS and healthcare staff, including those who work in care homes as well. The importance of the service user being involved in their treatment and their decision making, and hearing their concerns and working around their concerns as well.
Thank you very much. This brings an end to this episode. And as we usually end, Dr. Oge has the final words.
I normally draw on my faith, and I'll leave you a parting gift of Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. If you are a believer in God, or you're finding your way to God, always know that He is not far, and a prayer away keeps your faith at bay. Those are my nuggets of wisdom for today.